Welcome to the Bioethics Channel, produced by the Center for Practical Bioethics. This is Trudy Galblum, and I'm visiting this afternoon with Helen Emmett. Helen is a nurse who's written a book entitled Without Regrets, A Nurse's Advice About Aging and Dying. Helen is going to be joining us at the patron party on April 23rd, celebrating the Center's 30th anniversary. But now she's here to tell us a little bit about her book. Welcome, Helen.
Thank you, Trudy.
What inspired you to write this book?
Actually, the writing of this book came about through just some introspection and my husband and I reflecting on 10 years of being the caregiver and guardians for both of our mothers and thinking about how he as a physician and I as a nurse had felt so ill-prepared for all the decisions and just the constant reevaluation of the situation as a parent becomes frail.
And what did you hope to accomplish by writing the book?
We really thought that we had learned some very valuable lessons. We made some mistakes along the way, and we did some things pretty well. And we just thought that what we learned, if shared with others, really in a fashion of paying it forward, that those lessons would be of great value for other families.
The center is going to be emphasizing the role of patients as teachers at our 30th anniversary annual dinner and the symposium the next day at the Kansas City University of Medicine and Biosciences. What can we learn from your experiences about patients as teachers?
I think that I would even broaden the lessons that David and I learned even more so from patients only to patients and families, so that really the book Without Regrets has life lessons in each chapter regarding things like choosing a proxy, evaluating goals of care, thinking about how your family dynamics work. So I think that it fits very well with the theme this year for the annual dinner and the symposium, in that we're sharing true stories of patients and our families and our friends' families.
Give me a story.
So we'll share the story of Big John Hoyt, and Trudy and I have talked about this story before. John Hoyt was really not big in stature, but was always called Big John because he was a great businessman and he was quite the patriarch. He had a successful family restaurant business, and probably all four of his children worked for him at one time or another. But Big John had, over the years, worked hard and played hard and had probably smoked quite a few cigarettes in his day and ended up with pulmonary disease. So the story of John Hoyt is that David and I went by to see him and really were thinking it was our last time to see him, and it was kind of a saying goodbye to him. But what we found was a man who was trying to live his last few days at home, and he was really miserable. He was very short of breath. He was really fighting for air. The whole family, there was a heaviness in the house, just of desperation of what they could do for him. He'd been hospitalized several times over a period of a couple of years and eventually had come home from the hospital and was really just uncomfortable. And so at some point during our stay there, John came over and sat beside me and shared with me that he felt like this was no way to live. And through that conversation with him, I talked to him about hospice. He felt a little bit, I believe, that he would be giving up and that would be hard for his family. And I talked to him about how at this point in his illness that hospice wasn't a giving up, but it was a gaining of control, a control of his symptoms. I talked to him about feeling better and about having anxiety medicine that might help him with his breathing difficulties. And so as we left, I felt like he was thinking. And a couple of days later, I received an email from his daughter-in-law, and she shared with me that when he went to the physician the next time, he asked about hospice, and they did get hospice, and he lived for 2 weeks at home with his symptoms under control and the family feeling at ease that he was comfortable. So that story is just one where we learn together with the family and with John what he really wanted in those last few weeks, and we gave him an idea of how he might get that.
And I know there's stories like that throughout the book that really help illustrate the kinds of the lessons that you want to get across. A question I had, you seem to be really troubled in the book over the effectiveness or the value of advanced directives.
Yes, I think that medical directives are very hard to design in a way that they're perfect for the situation that generally arrives.
Because things change all the time.
Things change, and something that someone might want when they're 55 or 65 and pretty healthy can really change and be altered when someone is 89 and has multiple systems that are involved. And thinking about a breathing machine when you're 89 seems sort of irrational. But when you're a bit younger and maybe your health situation's not as complex, it could seem more rational. So the medical directive part, and I learned a lot of this through my ethics experience on ethics committees and through cases here at the Bioethics Center, is that the medical directives are really, really vague and are hard to be unique enough and to be helpful. And so I emphasize in the book that you can do those, but use them as a conversational piece and to make sure that everyone chooses a proxy. Yeah, that's a very important piece.
Right. Just don't just do this piece of paper and assume that everything's taken care of.
Right. It's really a disservice to your family more than a service if there aren't really good conversations that go along with that, especially for the person you choose to be your surrogate.
Right. Well, I know I'm really excited at the dinner. You've so generously donating books so that all of the guests will get a chance to really dig in and read all of this material. And I wonder, are there any other lessons or points that you wanted to get across in the book that maybe you'd like to mention today?
I think one of the last things that I would say is that it's easy to dwell on medical decisions, but one of the things that David and I found to be the most difficult, challenging, and puzzling were decisions about where mom and dad would live as they lived their final days of their journey. So would they be in assisted living? Would they be in a private home with help? Would they be in your home? Would they be in a sibling's home? Would they be better in skilled nursing? Would they be better in a long-term care facility? So having the conversation about those decisions, I believe, are just as important as asking about tube feedings and ventilators. So that's kind of a final note.
Great. That's great. Well, we hope everyone will join us at the 30th anniversary dinner on April 24th at the Marriott Muehlbach and the next day at the Kansas City University of Medicine and Biosciences for the symposium. You've been listening to the Bioethics Channel of the Center for Practical Bioethics. I'm Trudy Galblum, and for more information about the center, we do hope you will call or visit practicalbioethics.org. Thank you once again, Helen, and thanks for listening.
Thank you.